And now it is time for our guest speaker for tonight, and that is Billy.
Right on. You got it.
Well, you're occupied.
My name is Billy, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Billy.
I'm so glad to be here. I was previously, I'm recording it, by the way. I put recordings online, and I invited Greg to start sending me recordings from your Saturday night speakers, and I'll put them online. There's a few up there already. Anyhow, I'm writing a book called Sailing the Breath of God. I arrived at Alcoholics Anonymous. I arrived at a therapist on October 2nd, 1984. That's my sobriety date. And got to Alcoholics Anonymous within 2 weeks to the men's stag in Santa Barbara. And 4 months is my brother-in-law that had invited me over many years. And he had probably 15 years sober when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was a celebrity when I got to the men's stag. And like 4 months later, 4 months later, I was a secretary. I was railroading and so on. But anyhow, I love this way of life. I could talk for 2 hours just about today. Okay, and being so close to full on late, you know, at least I got the fudge here before the start time. And I had brain damage when I was out there. I'll get to it in my story probably, but anyhow, I had brain damage, and so if I get spaced or whatever, forgive me. Not forgive me, but just come along for the ride. I made some notes for myself. Welcome, Tristan.
Dustin.
Yes, Dustin. And it's so good to have a newcomer here, and all of you are newcomers to today, and that's where the rubber meets the road. And anyhow, so I want to begin with a prayer that I learned early in sobriety from a guy that was sober a long time. And it's you know, it's gender neutral, it's theology neutral, whatever. But it's just saying, and you can put any word you want ahead of it, you know, Creator God, Jesus, Holy Spirit, life, great power, power of the union, whatever, higher power. But the prayer itself is, please reveal yourself to me as you exist for me. And in the reading today, portion of chapter 5, on the day I was born, well, no, let me back up. My parents were born in 1915 and 1916 during World War I. They grew up in the Great Depression. Okay, they found each other, fell in love, and got married in 1936. My mom was Catholic. My dad was probably semi-pagan or whatever, but he got converted eventually in a few years or something like that. And my first sister was born in 1940. And my next sister was born in 1943. And the first sister was so good about having little siblings because she got swamped. My next sister was born in 1945. The next one in 1947. I was born in 1949. My next sister was born in 1950, the next one in 51, the next one in 53, the next one in 55, and then, thank God, my brother was born in 1957. Okay? So I grew up in the middle of town. It was a big Catholic family. When I was, and my dad got converted, and that's when they really started having kids. One thing that popped into mind about that point is that they never nurtured us like, you know, find a career, go to college, this and that. Just, we're feeding you, we got housing, we got food and shelter, where everything was so dicey for them, you know, during the war, during the other war, all that kind of stuff. And I just realized that today. And that, you know, in the reading of chapter 5, along the way, oh, Jesus, come on, Billy. Okay, in the reading of chapter 5, after the steps and everything, it says we're not saints, we're not perfect. The point is we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. And that's foundational. I got to share a year ago at the Men's Stag book study on Wednesdays. They have someone share on the last Wednesday of each month for that step, and I got to share on the 11th step for 20 minutes, and then it was question and answer. And this guy, a guy with like a week or two sober, says, "How do you know when you're spiritually fit?" And I was 8 years sober before I saw the word only in the 11th step. Okay, and when I saw that word only, it really opened things up, got me focused. Praying only for knowledge, God's will, the power to carry it out. So having done that for many years, by the time I led on an 11th step a year ago, when this person, this newcomer asked me, how do you know when you're spiritually fit? I went straight to my source and through inspiration, intuition, insight, you know, whatever it is in that moment. And my source gave me the answer. And I said, you're spiritually fit when you're willing to grow along spiritual lines. If you got to be something that you're not to be what you want to be, then forget it. It's not possible. So if you're 2 days sober and you're willing to grow, or months, you know, whatever it is, sober and you're willing to grow, you're spiritually fit. I'm like 3 weeks ago, 2 days, the day after tomorrow, on Monday, next Monday, 3 weeks ago, I hit 15,000 days. And it was a milestone coming up, you know, for a long time. And I was at a meeting at the airport, meeting like about 8:15 on that Monday night. And I realized, oh, wow, today's the day. And I looked at my calendar and sure enough, you know, it wasn't like all day long, you know, whatever. But the point is that I am willing to grow along spiritual lines. I need sleep to be coherent, okay? I'm going to be 77 in January. When I got sober, I was 35 years old, and I was a 70-year-old man on the inside. And now I'm 30-something on the inside. And that's what this way life does for us. Engages us in life directly through conscious contact. And so my mom and dad, they drank some, they took the edge off, but they never woke up, had to have a drink or anything like that. And in their circle, you know, alcohol was the luxury, you know, to just be with friends and have some drinks and get loose or whatever. I can't even imagine going through what they went through. growing up Catholic like that and with all those siblings, and actually out of the 10 of us, there's only 3 of us that needed sobriety, my immediate older sister and my immediate younger sister. And my immediate older sister has 37 years, my immediate younger sister has 36 years, and I'm 41 and change, working on today. And I remember standing outside one time with these two sisters, and in our growing up, it wasn't like about careers and go to college or this and that, it was like go to heaven, right? So we're standing out having a conversation, we're probably 9 or 10 years old, 11, whatever, and say, when I grow up, I want to have tuberculosis, or I want to grow up and have cancer, because the point was to get to heaven, and to get to heaven, you have to die. And those are the dots that we were connecting in that level at that time. Oh, my very first memory was toilet training, and I'm going into the bathroom to use the toilet. I got to go number 2, and one of my sisters or whatever comes in and says, oh, boys, put the lid up. Okay, so I'm sitting on the porcelain doing number 2. And eventually, sometime sooner or later, someone said, oh, for that, you can put the seat down. And that's my earliest memory. Growing up in the middle of a big family like that, the word us, I have a powerful understanding of that word. Anything human, anyone human, even the worst among us is one of us. And I'm nothing without my spirit. If my spiritual life right here, right now, just stepped aside and I'm speaking to you, I'm just drawing blanks. But I do have a spiritual life. I realized today, it's like, I think the brain has a location where fear and flight, you know, anger and all that stuff locates, or logistics, you're figuring out, or you're planning something. Well, I think the brain has a location that plugs in with your heart to your higher power. And if you got so much stuff on your brain that your connection with your higher power is just not there, space, then your connection isn't there. You know, the 11th step, when I'm sharing with someone and a guy that I'm helping on the steps now, and I'm not a regular sponsor, but the 11th step, the steps, people say the steps are numbered, do them in order. And I say the steps are numbered so we can talk about them. Okay, if I'm totally rude to you all and I say, God, you guys aren't even laughing, I'm out of here. Well, then I got to come back in and make amends or whatever, right? I got to take care of it in the present. So when we're creating present time records, we can take care of it in the present. And that's the 10th step. And we don't have to wait till we get our last amends done on the 9th step. I call my sponsor and say, hey, I got it done now. Except I got this whole list that's, I've been working on my steps that I got to go back to. You know, no, it's a real time thing. So the 11th step in my book, which I shaved today, I promise I'm not shaving until I get it written. And so far, I haven't even got the first page done, but it's well written on my soul. But the step number 11, they're numbers, so we can talk about them. And doing that step after number 3 is powerful, because before 3 is 2, and before that is 1. Through my therapist, the love of my life, I was doing the arts and crafts show. Okay. This would hold a 12-pack of beer. I made it, right? The liquor store was a half a block from my workshop. I swore off drinking every single morning because of the night before. Then later on in the day, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, where the alcoholic mechanics next door would say, hey, Billy, we'll buy if you fly, head over to the liquor store. I'd be walking over there, oh, no, not again, oh, no, not again. I'd be coming back, oh, yes, one more time, oh, yes, one more time, okay? So anyhow, I wound up at the arts and crafts show. I did little zipper pouches with a key ring on it, and then pouches about that big for cosmetics or whatever. And I had an industrial sewing machine head that I rigged so I could run it with a foot treadle sewing machine. So I was at the beach in Santa Barbara with a foot treadle sewing machine doing leather work while you wait. 15 years later, I did a diaper bag that was $1,000. It was custom to this doctor's specs for his nurse that was totally lightweight. It was leather, but nylon, and just all this, you know, whatever and so on. So I was at the art show doing leather work while you wait. And this, by the way, God just said, yeah, throw it in there, Billy. This is the first handbag I ever made, and I made it for my sister-in-law's grandmother. And years later, I asked about it. She was pretty sure she'd given it to a thrift store. And then within the year or something, she found it on the floor in her closet, and I got it. And this is the very first bag I ever made. And I'm not going to be doing a commercial, but, speaking of commercials, so. This is a commercial, but Andy, won't you do me a favor? This is my drunkalog in a picture. Can you pass these out? Or, yeah, pass those out. It's not John, it's
Joe.
My God, yeah. So good to see you. Yeah, you can pass them around, grab one if you don't have one already. That's me in the old days. Along the way, I volunteered at Central Office to answer the phone. That was when I was maybe 5 or 6 years sober. There was a guy running in and out in Santa Barbara. He was tearing his hair out, and he was bald, and he was the treasurer. And nobody associated with Central Office down there would stand in to be the treasurer. And I was just a newcomer to the scene answering the phone. And God said, you can do it. And one of the most powerful things I have to share tonight is when life beckons and it's got your name on it and it's good, it's light, it's not going into the darkness, say yes. Even if you don't know how to do it, that doesn't matter, you know, say yes. And so anyhow, I said yes to becoming treasurer. I told him I'm not going to be responsible for fundraising, but I'll tell you what's there. And from that, I learned to use a computer in 1990. Up until then, computers were for people who couldn't figure things out in the head. I was really smart. I had the top SAT score in high school. I was student body president. I went to Bishop High in Santa Barbara. The school, when I was a senior, the school needed to be accredited. And they were short staffed, so they put me in charge of that. I could come and go to classes. I was just very capable. And from growing up in the middle of so many sisters, and just... So, there was sometimes isolation so bad, you know, like I had my own room and they would lock me in, hook lock me into my room. Sometimes I'm misbehaving or whatever. My dad's not around to control things or whatever. And it happened so much. There's one time it happened. It was like the end of the day and they're like, oh, we're so sorry. You know, it's dinner time. We forgot all about you and that stuff like that. It wasn't all, it was like, sometimes you're in the center of attention, sometimes you're just kind of in the mix, and that's good, and sometimes totally isolated. But I put a hook lock on the inside to lock them out, and that's how it was sometimes. And in my room, there wasn't really much there, but there was books, like little black books, books with black covers like missals or Bibles or whatever, stuff like that. And I didn't know how to read. I wasn't reading them, but I knew these were holy, and so I hung out in a holy place when I was a kid. And Jesus was my primary male role model growing up. I'm not Bible thumping or thumping on how you should experience your spiritual life, but my prayer is that you experience your higher power, however your higher power presents to you. But nevertheless, I grew up with that. And anyhow, I was 10 or 11 and outside Seattle, outside the house. It was a beautiful sunny day. You know, it rains 270 days a year up there. And there's blue sky, big old cumulus clouds. And I felt this unbreakable, unshakable love of God and love of life. Okay. And I am, you know, jumping around and it's a wild ride here. I started talking about the arts and crafts show. So I'm down there for about a year and a half, and this woman shows up next to me, and she's doing lace pillows and lace aprons. And she's really got a beautiful energy, and she's beautiful and all that stuff. And this guy is helping her set up, and that's her husband, and so on and so forth. And the next week, she sets up right next to me. And the next week, she sets up, and the guy's not around, and we're talking, and she's separated and getting a divorce. And I invited her to dinner that night. Just the energy was just really good. And then to show her my workshop. And then afterwards, you know, and she has to drive like 12 or 15 miles up the coast to where she lived, up at El Capitan. And but before she goes, we hug. And the next thing you know, we kiss. And I'm like in love. And it was like woke me from my slumber. After high school, I graduated high school in 67. The Vietnam War was going on. I got my 1A classification for the draft. I passed my physical. I got a telegram from the Marine Corps. You're going to get drafted on Monday, so join the Marine Corps now. And so on Monday, I went down to Selective Service, applied for Conscientious Objector. It took a long time to get it. I did get it. I was in the first draft lottery in 1970. They drafted to 195, and I was 199. I was clear of the draft. The whole world at my whatever, and so on and so forth. And I remember I was in junior college when I first got to junior college after in 67, and the lottery was in 70. But there was a big old sign across the luncheon room, whatever, I mean, big old luncheon room, whatever, that says, "The saddest thing of tongue and pen is what might have been." Or something, it was something like that. And of all sad things of tongue and pen, the saddest are what might have been. I was like, well, I hope that's not me. Anyhow, so once I was free from the draft, I tore up my draft card, mailed it to the president with a nasty letter. They reclassified me 1H, which I thought meant you can take him any time, but you don't want to because he's mental. But as it happened, it turned out it just meant I'm clear from the draft because of the lottery. But there was nothing in me that was like, boy, now I can go become this, become that, get money, get her, get power. No. And I went on strike. I dropped out. And alcohol and pot helped a lot on dropping out. And along the way, a few years later, I'd done mescaline twice. I did peyote once. I did LSD four times. And the first time was a blast. The second time was pretty cool. The third time, someone handed me something. It's like a nasal inhaler, like you get at CVS, you know, to clear your sinuses. He says, try this. And I was already really high, and I take a... And it's like in heaven right now. And then in a minute, it goes away. And it's like, let me try that again. Well, the next time that I had, and this is where I got my brain damaged, the next time I was high on LSD, I made sure I had a pint bottle, okay? Open pint bottle. And I felt myself going into a darkness, memories just flying out my brain, just like, and anyhow, I saw myself going to a really dark, dark place. I'm going to be sucking my thumb in the corner of an institution for the rest of my life. And I called out Jesus, the name of my higher power, as a child. I had no spiritual life going on at that time, no spiritual practices whatsoever. But I called that out, and I came out of it. And I didn't know I had brain damage till like I was about 35 years sober, and God showed me. Because like when I first got sober, when I got to the men's stag, there was one guy after me, he said, you know, you're kind of different, or you're kind of weird, or whatever. I had no idea what he was talking about, but it was, you know, probably pretty spacey, and so on and so forth. And the from my experience of that amyl nitrate, that I called out Jesus, I came right out of it. Well, I came right out of it, and I was fully able to do hygiene, food, count numbers, work, make money, count money, and so on. But planning, having aspiration, and so on and so forth, no, that was all gone. So anyhow, so when I fell in love with Laura, it was just really, really special, really, really cool. And it was on August 22nd, and on September 22nd, it was like 1 month anniversary, October 22nd, second month anniversary, the night that we kissed, and she headed on home, and I got home and I poured like a glass of wine or whatever, and I put it to my lips. I might have took a sip, but it's like, no, I don't want to change how I feel, you know, because that's one of our main go-tos, you know, and to change how I feel, okay? And in sobriety, you learn, you know, we can change how we feel by changing what's on our mind, because our feelings are directly connected. So if I got this perspective, like, you know, life's a hole and we die, whatever, well, good luck with that. But we're human and we're capable. We're not bound to where we're at right now. If we're willing to grow, period. Willingness to grow to me is a spiritual experience. And if a person here is not, you know, disowns spirituality or whatever, that's fine. But being willing to grow, when you read my book, it will take you to a spiritual life. And then the point is praying only for knowledge of God's will and power to carry it out, right? And what's in the way of that? And so I'm a night owl. I was working on my website till probably like 2 in the morning or something like that last night. And the phone rings at 7:30 and it's someone with an emergency. And it's like, come on, Billy, walk your talk. And this is, I know I'm getting close to writing this book because God is consistently saying, walk your talk. And I am. The stuff that's in my book, the stuff that I'm sharing, that's what I'm about. That's my joy, my peace. I'm in the present. I'm going to spend a minute on the Higgs field. And first of all, maybe a half a minute or a minute on H2O, right? We all know what H2O is, right? It's water, okay? That's a chemical thing, okay? Okay, that's molecules. There's 2 hydrogen, 1 oxygen. Each hydrogen has 1 electron. So in H2O, there's 2 electrons there. And then oxygen has 8 electrons. So there's 10 electrons in a molecule of H2O, okay? In a snowflake, there's a quintillion molecules of H2O, okay? The electrons are going 1,242 miles per second in orbit around their atoms, okay? You extrapolate that. We're all made, we're 70% water. I mean, there's probably more molecules in my body than there are stars in the universe, and yours too. Wow. This place is powerful and profound, and it's shimmering. If we could see how it really is, we would, like, not be able to speak. Okay, so the punchline is on that about H2O is you don't have to understand H2O, but you must have it. You must drink it. You must hydrate yourself or you die, period. Okay, well, the same thing with the spiritual life. The idea that God is who we understand God, that's great language, but the idea anyone understands God is absurd on its face. We don't understand water, but I do understand aspects. I understand love with a capital L. I understand life with a capital L. I understand the Higgs field with a capital H or a small h, it doesn't matter. So here comes the Higgs field. Okay. And by the way, I don't drink coffee at night, but in case I got slowed down.
You don't need to worry about that.
So people that know that stuff that I shared with you about H2O, physicists really super studied a lot, physicists. They calculated in 1964, a team of them, led by a guy named Peter Higgs, calculated that there's a field underlying all material matter. Like electrons are primary particles, protons and neutrons have subparticles that make them, okay? And they said there's this field of energy without which nothing exists. It supports everything, that's every material thing that's in existence, okay? And that was in 1964, and it was postulated, it was written about, but they couldn't prove it. And in 2012 at the Hadron Collider in Switzerland, they proved it. And I knew that, I'd learned that along the way, right? Okay, so now fast forward, I'm right before the pandemic, I get back to the Catholic Church to see what's going on there. And there's a lot of good stuff going on there. I'm not knocking it, but I am in my book, I'm going to knock all religions in a way, to the extent that if that stuff gets in the way of being in the present with God right here, right now, you got to go do this and that and that to have conscious contact, then try the 12 steps.
Yeah.
Okay? So in that sense, I will be knocking it. But anyhow, so in 2012, it was proven the Hadron Collider in Switzerland, the Higgs field exists, okay? And I got back to the church right before the pandemic, and as a good AA member, I'm going to St. John's in the north end of Santa Maria, and this one guy, he's handling the baskets, he's helping at the altar, and he's helping with the Eucharist, okay? And that's the bread and the wine and so on. And I'm like, huh. So I went up to him after the Mass, and I said, if you need some help, I can volunteer. And he says, sure. So meet me at 4:30. So I did. And so he gives me three sets of baskets. And he said, put baskets here, baskets there, baskets there, and then find volunteers to pass them. Okay, I got that. And then he says, and about 2 minutes later, whatever, he says, and we need help during the Eucharist. I said, okay, I can handle it. This is maybe my fourth Mass back from getting back to Mass. And I'm up there. And so anyhow, it's Eucharist time. And the person with the wine, there's a station to the right of the altar, to the left, and in the center. And the person with the wine is going to the left, and I'm following to the left. And there's this whole line of people. And I hold up the bread, the body of Christ. I hold it up, and someone has their tongue out. They have their hands out, and I'm holding it. And I'm wanting them to take or get a look. And they're looking at me, and I'm looking at them. And finally, I just give it to them, right? So a few days later, I'm at a family wedding, and a few of my sisters are practicing Catholics, and I shared with them, like, I got back to the church, and I helped with the Eucharist, and they say, oh, you're a Eucharistic minister. Oh, my God, how cool is that? And I'm like, well, what's that, you know? Like, is there something I'm supposed to do? I was holding out, and anyhow, she says, you're supposed to say Body of Christ. So the next time I get back there, Body of Christ. Okay, so the punchline relative to the Higgs field is I open the Bible, and I've read the Bible. I'm not a Bible thumper. There's good stuff in there, there's horrific stuff in there, just like the Big Book. You know, the Big Book doesn't have horrific stuff, but has antiquated stuff, like the idea that we admitted we're powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. I got here, I read a book called, in 1981, called Under the Influence through my therapist. So that was the scientific basis, what the doctor's opinion says in the Big Book, right? And if the Big Book was written today, it wouldn't say the doctor's opinion, it would say, this is alcoholism. Mm-hmm. So I knew that on my way here, okay? I have a physiology. If I have a drink, a physical craving is going to kick in. That's not a problem. If I'm a welder and I got six fingers on my hand, I got a special glove. If someone, another welder says, hey, Billy, can you grab this for me? I say, sure. You know, I got it, whatever. It's a condition. I learned along the way that any problem anyone ever had, has now, or ever will have, what makes a problem without which is not a problem, is the fact that there's a solution. So when something pops up and I'm disturbed, okay, it's either a condition or a problem. When I identify it, my mind goes to the solution right away if there is one. I don't have a problem on my mind, I got a solution on my mind. And if there is no solution, it's just a condition, like the sun's going to explode someday. Oh no, I don't lose sleep over that, but there's no solution, I promise that. So anyhow, so I open the Gospel of John. And this is the most powerful thing that I have to share. I could go on for 2 more hours, but of course that's not happening. I'm done in about 3 minutes. But in the beginning was the Word, with a capital W, and the Word was with God, with a capital G, and the Word was God, and through the Word all things were made, and nothing was made except what was made through the Word. And I got goosebumps, hair stood up, and it dovetailed with what I already knew about the Higgs field. If the Higgs field ceased right now, the whole universe ceases right now. Now, what is that underlying field? It's a field of energy. I think it's love. I think it's God's love, our Creator's love, or our source, the love. This is provable. There is this field that if it ceased, everything ceases. Okay. So extrapolating that from the beginning, it didn't cease like one day and then it ceased and then the next day this. No, it's been a continuum from the beginning, whatever it is, right? So this is that moment. This is this point in time, in this moment. And to me, there's no such thing as time. Time is a measurement of change. where we are in relation to the sun or in relation to our rotation or whatever, you know. And not that that matters a whole lot. What's more important is I got 2 minutes left. This is the moment of creation, okay? The word, the Higgs field, is synonyms. In the beginning was the Higgs field. The Higgs field was with God. The Higgs field was God. Through the Higgs field, all things were made. And nothing was made except what was made through the Higgs field. I have the opportunity to always, I am always in the presence of God. You are always in the presence of God. We are all of humanity is always in the presence of God. What's going on in our minds can separate us from that. Okay? And the 12 steps, most human beings grow up with a lead role in a cage, whether they grew up with abuse and stuff like that, or materialism, or ideologies, or whatever. They got this lead role in a cage, and so on. And they have no possibility of conscious contact with God in the present, and treating human beings like human beings. There's times when my conscious contact is, I'm not really feeling it. Okay, and I have a great metaphor that all this stuff God gave me, my higher power gave me, you know, the great spirit of the universe gave me, whatever. It's the concept of black ice. So most of you or a lot of you have driven on a highway in black ice. Mm-hmm. And what you don't want to do in black ice, you don't want to hit the brakes. You don't want to step on the gas and you don't want to make sharp turns. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, on a spiritual level, any human being is fully capable to have a moment of black ice. It might go on for minutes, might go on for hours. It doesn't matter. Don't abandon your spiritual life and don't abandon yourself. You're just on black ice. And going through it makes you stronger. And it's time to stop. And I'm a man of my word. The coffee is great. And I just, can I go 30 more seconds? I packed this thing. Okay. The 12, I was going to read the St. Francis prayer. Never mind that. Okay, this is Albert Einstein, Ideas and Opinions. This is The Unexpected Universe by Lauren Isley. This is St. Augustine, City of God. This is Reinhold Niebuhr, The Nature and Destiny of Man. Okay, growing up in Catholic, this is Under the Influence. Anyhow, growing up Catholic, with countless Catholic libraries, if you want to know things, you want to have conscious contact with God, you got a ton of stuff to read and study, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Wait, not done. Just a second. Let's see. Dustin. Come on up. Come on up here. So instead of a ton of books, like, you don't understand this, well, you need it. Here, it's 12 steps. It's way, way simpler.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. It'll take you to the same place that all the steps and all the books in the world will take you to. Welcome. Thank you, Pastor Cher.
You got all that?
I do. That's because I'm sober and I'm 30-something on the inside.
I got a little sun for you. I'll go that way, you go this way.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Bill.
Yeah.
I did take a lot more acid than you, though. And this is just a small token of our appreciation for you coming down and taking your time with us.
Thank you so much.